Not even waiting today. Not even pre-announcing. Jumping straight into it. I've got coffee. You know, I went and got coffee and I was like, all right, this is now the time to do this because I can feel a little bit more awake, which is great. So, yeah, no pre-warning. Okay. Bunch of different stuff as usual. Let's start with the normal usual bit. Around sponsor this week is Collide again. Massive sponsor to Collide. It's not a competition, but they're well and truly my loyal sponsor. Collide ensures only secure devices can access your cloud apps as zero trust, tailor made for Okta. Book a demo today. As I've said many times before, actually going out there and giving away demos and other things that people can see and feel with their own hands is wonderful. Go beyond skin deep compliance with comprehensive device visibility and a commitment to end user remediation. Built from the ground up for Okta, users fix problems without the help desk. You define what trust means. Now, of course, the other thing about this, let me just make sure that I'm getting my facts right. It's not that it's overly early. It's late for me. It's just after 9 a.m. But it has been a long week. As I was going to mention, Collide was recently acquired by 1Password as well. So as a 1Password advisor and someone with some skin in the game, I'm very, very fascinated to see how that pans out too. So it's nice when those two worlds collide. I wonder if I can have sponsored by 1Password, supported by Collide. I don't know. We'll work that out. I'll find someone. Right. Now, last week, I mentioned something that got more feedback than what I expected to, which was I was wearing my tennis visor, and I mentioned that I had two moles cut off. One was on my forehead. You can just see the remnants of that here. And the other was on the back of my hand. You could probably barely see the remnants of that. And a number of people were like, oh man, like that's so good. You got to do that stuff. And to be clear again, the context I gave was, this is a very sunny place. It's a very sunny country, and then we're in the very sunny place of it. And then we're in an environment where we're so often outdoors, in the water, on the tennis court, things like that. So every single year, we go and have a skin check. So the doctor goes over, like almost literally with a fine-tooth comb. It's like looking at pretty much every single part of your body. He's like, there's a couple of places I don't go. That's up to you. If you see anything that concerns you, check it out and come back and we'll inspect then. And in many places, you'll spot something, let's probably look at the backs of your own hands, right? And you go, oh, yeah, there's a few little freckles and so on there. But he'll see something that I had never thought twice about. It gets that little magnifying glass, what's going on there? So a few weeks ago when we did our annual thing, he's like, there's one here and there's one up here in my forehead. We're gonna take them off. And they have they call it a hole punch, but it's like a pen. Almost like if you picture like a normal pen, right? And the bottom of it, instead of just being like a round piece of plastic, is like a round blade. And he just puts it, he puts it there and just twists it like this, pulls up a little bit, scalpel, yoink, tiny little bit of skin comes off, stitch here, job done. Now, I'd done that last week. I had the stitch in. I went back this week, both stitches out, both biopsies, absolutely benign as well. And the reason I'm mentioning it is it was just such a non-eventful thing. The only issue I had is I don't follow instructions very well, apparently. And when I was listening to some instructions he gave Charlotte, something in there was 48 hours. And in my brain, I'm like, oh, 48 hours, I can do whatever I want. So I jumped back in the pool like an idiot. And this one got a little bit loose and came out on its own. But anyway, apparently it's all fine. It will heal. Go and get the stuff checked. Like, it's super, super easy. And it's not like some health checks where it's overly invasive or uncomfortable or things like that. It's just, dude looks at your skin and it's like, yeah, usually you're just fine. Okay, now it was a busy week. And the first thing I had here on the list, which I kind of had a strong sense was going to come anyway, was the alleged AT&T breach no longer being alleged. Now, let's go back in the chronology for this because I've got the whole tweet thread in here. And I think if we go far enough back, the first time we started hearing news about this was like 2021. So 2021, someone's like, I've got the data. I think they wanted like $1 million or something for the data. And apparently at the time, AT&T investigated and determined that it was a non-event, that it wasn't their data. Okay, fair enough. So then we fast forward through to the 18th of March, and this data appears on a popular hacking forum, and the data is now available freely to download. And the headline figure is 70 million. Now, the number that they actually quote is 73 million. I think I found 49 million unique email addresses in it. So this data's up there on a popular hacking forum, which is business as usual. The thing that was different was social security numbers, which in America are a really big deal, dates of birth, which everywhere are a bigger deal than what they should be, because you should be able to have parties and cake and stuff like that without disclosing part of your identity verification data. But they were the big headlines, those attributes. And that appeared freely downloadable for everyone. AT&T came out and said, nah, still not ours. Apparently it's the same data set, still not ours. And whether it was or was not theirs didn't change the fact that it was a very large amount of data and that the data was actually legitimate. And what I mean by legitimate is that it was people's real dates of birth, it was their real social security numbers. I know that because I went through and verified the whole thing. And by verify, I mean I actually reached out to a whole bunch of Have I Been Pwned subscribers, and I'm like, hey, is this your data? And they're like, yeah, that's my data. And also, I'm an AT&T customer. It's a hard position to be in when you've got an organization of any type, let alone a very big, very well-resourced, very American one. I think people can get the sentiment of where I'm going with this. It's hard when they're going, it's not our data, because you basically have to go, okay, well, short of any strong evidence to the contrary and not just correlating facts, and our strong evidence to the contrary would be if there are enumeration vectors and I could easily find very AT&T-specific email addresses in there, and they enumerated, so I could like go to the website, do password resets, and they'd get messages. So that would be a strong correlating factor. That didn't exist in this data set. So I'm really at the mercy of if they decide to acknowledge it's theirs. And all I can do in the interim is just collect information. So when it went into Have I Been Pwned, lots of people got notifications, and lots of people then sort of went, this has to be my data, because it's an email address, for example, I only gave to AT&T. And there were a lot of these out there. And every time someone made a comment like that, and often it would be an email to me or a Twitter DM or something like that, I'd go, look, can you just go and just make a note on the blog post? Make a comment, because that's public. Everyone will see that. And if we get enough of a groundswell of people doing that, that may help to influence AT&T to take a deeper look. So we kept doing that. And as we went through this process, I'm going through my Twitter thread here, I'm sharing information that people had left. And when I say information, when, for example, I emailed Have I Been Pwned subscribers, said, this is your data. So someone here says, that is my info. I am an AT&T customer. Someone else, the info below is my email and home address and phone number. Are we able to confirm whether a decrypted SSN and birth date info is not available? And in that particular case, this person didn't have decrypted values. That was the other weird thing about it. There was one large file that had the 70 plus million rows in it with the 49 million unique email addresses, and it had encrypted values for birth date and social security number. But then there were other files that just had the decrypted values for them all. So as I said a few weeks ago, I'm not sure if someone got the private key for that encrypted content, or whether it was like Base64. It wasn't Base64 encryption. That's not a thing. That's not a thing, and that's not what it looked like. It didn't look like Base64. But there was obviously a fundamental flaw with the way they protected the data, because it was designed to be resilient. I mean, you encrypt to be resilient. You encrypt in storage to be resilient to precisely this sort of thing. And here you are with like all the data out there, which is kind of screwy. Anyway, data goes into Have I Been Pwned. Where are we here? March 19, so more than 2 weeks ago now. And then we start getting all these reports from people saying, yep, you know, this is, for example, here, I've said, someone says, I have a catch-all on my domain, and the address breached was AT&T at. Now, if you sign up to a service and you put the service's name at your domain and you start getting email to that address, it is highly likely, highly likely that that address has gone from the party that you provide it to somewhere else, and that's what started sending you the email. Or if it appears somewhere floating around the web, as it has done here, then it's almost certainly from that service. Of course, there are exceptions. You could always fabricate it, but yeah. G'day, Wayne. Thank you for joining. It'll be Friday evening for you. Saturday morning here on sunny Gold Coast. Now, then AT&T comes out. There's less, well, actually, this is probably 1 week ago today. It must have been just after I did the last video. And they've said, AT&T data-specific fields were contained in a data set. Now, isn't that an interesting term? I'm going to open up the whole disclosure. Because when I read this, I wondered how many lawyers it took to write this. Now, to put this in context, I would say this must only be a couple of hundred words. It's a very, very short disclosure. I'll read the first paragraph because it's short and it just... Again, just think of the input and the sorts of parties that would have provided the input in order to create this wording. AT&T has determined that AT&T data-specific fields were contained in a data set released on the dark web approximately 2 weeks ago. So that term, AT&T data-specific fields. Whilst AT&T has made this determination, it is not yet known whether the data in those fields originated from AT&T or one of its vendors. Now, that's a fair statement, and I've said that all the way along. In fact, even in the original blog post, I said, look, it could be an AT&T partner. It could be the partner who, I was going to say the partner who sends SMS. You kind of hope AT&T can send their own SMSs. It might be the partner who does the physical mail delivery, or it might be the party that sends out the modems for internet customers or something like that. With respect to the balance of the data set, which includes personal information such as social security numbers, the source of the data is still being assessed. And then there's a few things on here, robust investigation, so on and so forth. It does say, based on our preliminary analysis, the data set appears to be from 2019 or earlier, impacting approximately 7.6 million current AT&T account holders and approximately 65.4 million former account holders. It's just a very implicit way of saying we got breached. You know what I mean? Like it's... I wrote this blog post after the Australian Red Cross Blood Service had their data breach, and their response was extraordinarily good, and that was widely regarded as sort of the gold standard for data breach disclosure. And one of the really key tenets of a good breach disclosure, well, in fact, many of the good tenets of key breach disclosure is certainly speed, so not so much, transparency. It does feel like we're missing a lot of information here. An apology is nice. I always make the analogy. It's like if my kids make a mistake, you know, say you're sorry, like apologize. I always get the sense lawyers don't like saying they're sorry because saying you're sorry is an acknowledgement of fault. And that may be something that they're trying to hold back. Now, there's a lot of other things to unpack here. As I was communicating, because I got a lot of requests from the usual journalists and things, a journalist from a very well-known publication, we had a bit of to and fro. And I said, look, you're going to see class actions out of this for sure. And he's like, why is that? Like, well, first of all, it happens after just about every data breach, regardless of whether there's impact on people. And I vehemently dislike this. It's literally lawyers shopping around, looking for customers for class actions. I know they do this because I keep getting emails from them. They send me an email going, hey, you've got a website where people can find they're in a data breach. What if we put some product placement there where once you find you are in, for argument's sake, the AT&T data breach, easy link through to us, you get to join our class action. And I'm going to paraphrase here, they'll get no money, but we'll do really, really well out of it. So no, we don't do that. Anyway, inevitably, there are now class actions popping up. Now, there's a quote here that's right at the end of the thread. Where are we? I've got to talk about dark web in a moment. Somewhere in here, there's a comment. Here we go. A story here. Where'd it go? Here we go. At least 10 class actions filed in Texas, which is obviously just one state. So I don't know how many class actions have been filed already. But part of the reason why I said this to the journo, I said, yeah, look, every company gets class actions after a data breach. Certainly every company of significance and data breach of scale. And I know many companies that are very small with fairly small data breaches, and they've been the recipient of a class action. The thing I think AT&T is going to really struggle with is that 2021 dismissal. Because if in 2021 they had sufficient information that had they investigated it further, they could have found this was legitimate. And we've now had the course of, I think it's almost 3 years. I feel it was later in 2021. The course of almost, let's call it 2.5 years of time has passed, and identity verification data such as social security numbers and birth dates has been out there in the hands of an unauthorized third party who obviously doesn't have good intentions for their well-being, and they've taken 2.5 years. That's going to sting. That's going to really, really sting. Now, how class action lawyers actually prove damages to individuals and tie it specifically back to that breach is a harder problem. I don't think it's an insurmountable one. So you signed up to get a loan with AT&T at mydomain.com. Oh, what are the chances? But you get what I mean, because there's so much data floating around. Maybe your identity was stolen because of the AT&T breach. Maybe it was all the other breaches we know about. Maybe it was all the other breaches we don't know about. Hard problem. So the class action thing is kicking off. Now, because of that, I would imagine that every single thing that AT&T says about this is going to be so carefully vetted and controlled, and we may not get much good transparent information in the way we as the geeks would actually like to see it. The other thing that got more attention than what I thought it should have is the use of that term dark web. Now, let's clarify here. The headline of their disclosure is AT&T addresses recent data set released on the dark web. The byline says AT&T has determined that AT&T specific or data specific fields were contained in a data set released on the dark web. The first sentence says almost the same thing. But there's three dark webs before you even get to the second sentence of the disclosure. Now, I mentioned earlier on, this was posted to a popular hacking forum. It was a popular hacking forum where you open up your Google browser and you go https://websitename.com and you're there. It is not the dark web. The dark web has a very clear definition. And it is not the website that every rando out there can not only just type the URL into their browser for, but actually go into a brand. And I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to search for here, but I just wonder how easy it is just to find this if I go incognito. So it removes my history. Let's see. Can I find this with one fairly obvious search? Well, the thing is now, there's so much news about it. Oh, yeah, including my blog. But if you know where to go, and anyone in the business of screwing other people over and doing the identity theft thing will know where to go. So there are a couple of discussions where people reached out and they're like, hang on a second, like you're saying this is on the clear web, they're saying it's on the dark web. So, yeah, okay, well, right, can we just maybe start with the definition here? Because I think that's part of the problem. And I feel that it is the same as when someone gets breached and they've got a gazillion decrypted password hashes out there and they say, don't worry, the passwords were encrypted. Like, I know why you say that, because you're speaking to like normal everyday people, but you're wrong. That's not what it is at all. We jump into the Wikipedia definition of dark web. The dark web is the worldwide web content that exists on dark nets. Overlay networks that use the internet but require dark web. Anyway, and it goes on and on. But the point is that when it is a popular hacking forum and it's sitting there on the clear web and you can search for it with Google and find the result, that is by every definition clear web. And then some of these journals are getting into just this, frankly, kind of annoying cycle. They're like, but hang on, this website also has a .onion address. Does that make it the dark web? Well, Facebook has a .onion address. Does that make Facebook the dark web? Like, settle down with the term. Let's just say it is on the internet. How about that? It just bugs me more than it should. Simon says it's buffering. Let me check on my phone. Do I see buffering from my phone. Oh, it looks okay there. I was literally watching myself just to make sure it was all working. Because I started, Simon says, okay now, thanks Simon. Because I started this without any notice whatsoever, and there was no one at the very start, I was like, I better actually make sure it's working. But now you're commenting, so no, it's fine. All right, so that's AT&T. If I was to speculate about where we're going to go with this now, I suspect, given that we have a very high degree of confidence that this was data provided to AT&T, and there are so many people, and there's so much data, and it's so impactful, and they will be spending so many millions of dollars on incident response right now, I suspect we will find out. This is my prediction. We'll find out where it came from, and I also suspect that it will be an AT&T partner or some subsidiary of AT&T. And I only say that because I feel like back in 2021, and then when this first broke news a few weeks ago, there would have been sufficient investigation on the obvious locations, the obvious surface of this at AT&T, that if it had been from there, they might have been able to correlate that back. That's my gut feel. We'll see. It doesn't change the fact that all that data's out there. All right, speaking of all that data out there, PandaBuy. There's a name that I never knew existed before the other day. So apparently PandaBuy allows you to buy a whole bunch of, I believe, fairly cheap stuff from China. China, Panda. Let's have a look at the website. I hadn't heard of it before I saw it message on Twitter from an account that shares a lot of stuff about data breaches. So they put a message out there, PandaBuy data breach. Okay, well, that seems fairly important to know. That data was published to a popular hacking forum. It was very easy to go and grab that data, very easy to verify. It was on the clear web too, just adding that, PandaBuy, clear web. Very easy to verify that it was legitimate. So that did not take long at all. Now, on April 1st of all days, saw VX Underground tweeting this. Great account there, VX Underground, shares a lot of really good info. PandaBuy has been breached by threat actors operating under the names Sangerio and Intel Broker. Exfiltrated data includes user ID, first name, last name, phone number, email, login IP, full address, order information. And it says breach patrons are relatively excited. Now, I think what they mean by this is that connoisseurs of data breaches, both the good ones and the bad ones, were getting quite excited by this. Now, let's have a look at the chronology here. This was, based on my Aussie time, 3:52 p.m. on April 1st. Now, about 2 hours later, 5:44, I've tweeted about this, saying, has anyone seen a statement from PandaBuy? Because this is, not only had VX Underground posted this publicly on Twitter, but they had snapped Discord discussion of the PandaBuy Discord of people talking about the data breach. So clearly this is very, very much in the public domain now. And then it started to kind of go downhill. Now, how do I say this nicely? I have observed over processing thousands of data breaches, nearly 800 of which are going to have been pwned over the years, that there are very different cultural tolerances in different parts of the world to acknowledging data breaches, acknowledging fault, doing disclosure. And in my experience, China is one of those parts of the world that has a different definition of transparency. How's that for a shot at it? I find it very hard to get honest, transparent disclosure from Chinese companies that have been breached. Now, part of that may be I can't speak Chinese, but when you're running a service like this and you're communicating with people in English and you see the things that I'm about to talk about, you might agree with me. PandaBuy, shop from China, shop with PandaBuy. What can you actually buy on PandaBuy? Purchase order, ship to warehouse, quality checks, global shipping. Popular products are things like a cross necklace. It's all the sorts of like random shit you'd expect to buy from a cheap online Chinese store. And I don't say that in any derogatory sense, because clearly there's a big market for that. I imagine it's a little bit like Temu. Loads and loads of stuff on there, which looks super cheap. And that's what the website does. Here's where it starts to go off the rails, because there's all these people starting to say that they're trying to discuss this in the Discord channel for PandaBuy, and they're getting shut down. So, all right, here's someone here. PandaBuy Discord doing damage control. They're blocking the word breach and deleting messages. So someone says here, I ordered 5 carts off PandaBuy. Why do they got to get breached now? I love getting my data sold. And says someone, and then I think this got deleted. So that wasn't good. Someone else here. Let's have a look what they said. Someone tried to send a message just with the word breach. This is on Discord. And immediately under that says, failed to send message. Hold for options. This content is blocked by the server from server moderators. Now, what was kind of funny is they blocked the word breach, but they didn't block the word breached. So people are just chucking an ED on the end of it. Any of you who have ever built systems where you're trying to do naughty word list blocking or things like that before will know that it is an absolute losing battle. If you don't believe me, Google the Scunthorpe problem. Can't talk about it in too much detail here, but you'll get it. It's a nightmare. Someone else here. So I tweeted this. Comments captured by someone else certainly looks like they know something happened. So you start to have one of the moderators here on the Discord channel, Chad, is obviously knows about this discussion, and by all intents and purposes seems to be implicitly acknowledging as a breach. So someone here says, fire the tech team. If this happened last year, how TF did it happen again? And Chad says, no user's personal information was stolen this year. That's old information. So it got stolen last year. Our technical department has organized and solved this problem in time. The information I saw this year, all questions asked by users. Also, do not spread rumors within the server to cause panic. How often have you seen a message like that? It's like, please don't talk about this thing where we've had this big breach because it will cause panic. I'd really like you all just not to talk about it. Next message here. Chad says, this is bad, but our technical department responded immediately and solved the problem. Now, that does seem like an admission, doesn't it, Chad? Someone else makes a comment here. My dad is scared and will not let me buy stuff ever again. How do I remove? Chad says, this attack was not successful, except for all the data. The user's personal privacy has not been disclosed. Our technical department, how much like Iraqi Foreign Information Minister is this? Like, this is, because the thing is, it was already posted to a popular hacking forum, which was very, very easy to find. So why you would go, the data always gets out. It always gets out. It's another one from him in here. Man, Chad was on a bender here. Chad, please do not believe such rumors easily. Our technical department saw this incident immediately. There's another bit here. Chad, sorry, late reply, bro. Regarding data issue, our technical department resolved this incident. It's just in the same thing over and over again. User privacy is not being compromised. The information spread by these people is a question asked by some users. Now, there's clearly a bit of a language barrier somewhere with Chad, but there's no ambiguity about the fact he was trying to dismiss it. And then it goes on. In the thread, I put a proof because I took a bunch of Mailinator addresses, put them into Password Reset. They got emails saying, yes, this account exists. If you fabricated an email address on Password Reset, it'll come back and say the account does not exist. It's like, this is your data. Now, eventually, PandaBuy confirms it. Now, this is from Jasmine. We sincerely apologize for the data breach that's affected some users today, some millions of users. After receiving the feedback today, we immediately contacted the technicals for investigation. After checking, this incident was caused by a hacker organization using illegal technology to break through the platform's information security and try to entry into the platform's information system and make it public after illegally stealing some data information. After compromising the data, this information doesn't involve your bank transaction and other personal information. Pandabuy unequivocally condemns this illegal action and has taken necessary legal measures to require relevant infringing websites to immediately delete all unauthorized user information, block all infringing links, and will actively pursue the legal liability of infringers. Now, what else is in here? I got a lot of shit for this. As a gesture of goodwill, we're offering a 10% freight subsidy code, valid for 1 month with no users. And they got slammed for this because they've basically tried to go, no breach, nothing's happened, it's fine. And then eventually go, okay, it did happen, but it was illegal. It was illegal. Here's 10%. I think it's just 10% off your freight, which I imagine would be a very small portion of the overall order. Now, it's like this is pretty much everything to do wrong in responding to a data breach. I did get a personal contact from someone alleging to be at Pandabuy, and I have no reason to disbelieve that. And they were fine. They were basically trying to figure out how to scrub data from the internet, to which I said, you can't work on your disclosure. So someone has been in touch, but you know, when data is posted to a Clear Web forum, AT&T Clear Web forum, like this one in question, where the AT&T data was and the Pandabuy and all sorts of other data was, when it is posted there, in a matter of minutes, it's going to be in the hands of hundreds of people, hours is thousands, days, tens of thousands. Like, it is going to spread so quickly. You cannot get that data back. As soon as it appears there, it is by all reasonable definition public domain. You just can't get that back. And to see what is inevitably a technical team try to say, how can we get the data back? Like, the time you're spending doing that, you're not spending doing disclosure. And as far as I can tell, they still haven't done disclosure, because normally when disclosure notices go out to a large number of people, a bunch of them send it to me and I see it. So as far as I know, they have not actually disclosed to impact individuals. Look at some of the comments here. Kevin, are companies past the point of blaming breaches on the intern? I think any company of reasonable size is past being able to blame it on the intern. If you're a small organization and you trust one individual, maybe it's your nephew, you know, or something like that, to do your web development, you know, that's one thing. But if you're an AT&T or a Pandabuy or anyone like this, there should be no single point of failure. There will be multiple people, multiple processes. Now, we, of course, don't know exactly what happened with AT&T yet, or with Pandabuy for that matter, but often it does end up being, well, there was a backup of it left on a non-production server, or something stupid like that. And that is definitely past the point of being able to blame it on the intern or anyone else for that matter. Different thing then. Timok, 1977. What compensation, if any, do you think that victims of hacks such as the recent Medibank hack should receive? That is a really, really good question. Now, I'm not a lawyer, okay, but I think that there is a reasonable question of, it's a bit multifaceted. Are there damages to an individual? I have been in 30 plus data breaches that I know of. 30 and have I been pwned? Some didn't go into have I been pwned, like the Medibank, not Medibank, I wasn't in that one. The Latitude Financial, I got a notification about that. Oh, apparently I was in that because I had a loan somewhere in the 90s and they still had my data last year. I was in the Australian Red Cross Blood Service, which didn't go into have I been pwned for various reasons. Point is, let's call it, I've been in at least 36 different data breaches. To the best of my knowledge, I have not suffered any loss because of that. My feelings were hurt. I was pissed, don't get me wrong, particularly for Latitude. Like, why did you still have my data decades after I'd used your service? But from the question of damages, what damage did I receive as a result of that? I have not had identity theft. I've had some credit cards defrauded. I don't believe it was because of any of those incidents. And it still didn't cost me anything because the bank gave me the money back and it was a bit inconvenient. Where I think it gets very difficult is, what about people who have suffered some sort of a damage due to something like identity theft? How do you then tie that back to a given incident, given how many different incidents there are, given how many different times people publish their own date of birth to social media, and then that's used as part of identity verification. How many times people fall for phishing attacks and leave a little bit of information behind them. Even if you just look at the number of data breaches, probably most of us are in, and you look at the data attributes that have been exposed, your phone number might have been in multiple different places, and that was used as part of the identity verification process. So establishing damages is, by what I think is a practical definition, extraordinarily hard. Now, I'm sure lawyers will come back and they'll talk about distress and all the rest of it, and that should be worth something. But I'd be trusting pro bono lawyers a lot more than all the class actions I see where the lawyers are making mega bucks. So I question what people should receive there in terms of damages for the most part. Now, if it was, say, the Optus data breach here where you had to go and get your driver's license replaced, you should be able to do that for free. And you were. So people managed to go and get their driver's license replaced and they didn't get charged for it. I believe it is extraordinarily difficult to change your social security number in the US. So if that's not possible, well, then you're not going to have to incur a cost in doing that. But then how would you possibly tie any damages back to that incident? I think what I have a lot of issue with the class action thing is it feels very opportunistic on behalf of lawyers. And I strongly, strongly believe that there are many circumstances in data breaches where companies should have some sort of penalty leveled at them. Certainly financial penalty, in some places, possibly even criminal charges for directors / CISO. I mean, we've seen this happen with the Uber CISO. Well, that was a little bit more complicated than just screwing up because he obviously tried to disrupt the natural judicial process. Anyway, I'd like to see companies leveled with a penalty. I don't want to see it go to lawyers. I would much rather see regulators level penalties at an organization. And we are increasingly seeing that happen. So that's something. All right, next breach, Survey Llama. Let's talk about Survey Llama. Now, I'm just going to read the Survey Llama website and we can sort of figure out what this is. Someone reached out to me with Survey Llama data. Said Survey Llama's had a data breach. They've been in touch with Survey Llama. Survey Llama has fixed whatever vector it was that he got the data from. I don't think he actually said. Survey Llama, earn up to 20 Aussie dollars per survey from home. Take paid online servers and earn up to surveys earn up to 300 AU per month. For each completed survey, you'll receive points you can convert into cash. Want to earn even more money? Answer 3 surveys a day to get a bonus. Now, if you listen, maybe just in the comments, so I don't put my foot in it, but why? Like, why? And how much would you trust this data? Like, does this thing go into like market research stuff where we surveyed a random selection of people we paid money for and then something? It just, or is it one of those ones where your data, I mean, I'd hate to even try and read the terms and conditions here, membership terms and conditions. Does your data then end up being with a broker and being used for other purposes? Termination, suspension, so anything here about conditions of participation, honest, you got to be honest. You provide Survey Llama's information relating to your participation in market research or other surveys conducted, including survey responses, ideas, comments, or other information. There's obviously a reason that they're in business, and I don't think it's just to pay you money for doing surveys. Clearly that data is then sold, whether it's market research or data brokers. I'd have to read more. I don't know. Don't quote me on it. What I do know is that the data was legitimate, and I got in touch with Survey Llama. I said, look, someone has sent me data that is apparently a data breach, and they did come back and said, yes, they're aware of it. And they have, I forget the exact term they used, but it was something to the effect of, we have notified users by email. You know, before I was saying with PandaBuy, if they do disclosure and there's enough people there, someone will send the disclosure notice to me. There's always multiple, you know, a good example is Timberland. I've had so many people send me Timberland disclosure notices because it, inevitably it's gone to millions of people and a small fraction of those are going, hey, Troy might find this interesting. I haven't seen anyone send me a Survey Llama disclosure notice, but they did tell me they were sent. So point is, they knew about it. Problem was fixed. Data's loaded to have a bean pwn. And that's about, I think, all I can say on Survey Llama at the moment. Another day on the internet. Okay, last thing, getting off the data breachy stuff. I've been speaking in recent weeks about 3D printing, about getting the Prusa Mark IV, which Elle, my 11-year-old daughter, and myself have built from scratch. We got the kit, we did the whole thing, took weeks and weeks, put it all together. We have it running. We're printing stuff. We are aiming in about, it is about 2 months, must be almost 2 months from the day where we'll be in Oslo. Where are we? 10 to 14 June. So I think it's going to be 13th of June, just over 2 months, before we're going to do a talk in front of a whole bunch of technology professionals about 3D printing, which is going to be really, really cool. I'm really quite excited about that. So we're going to be doing that. I'm going to be doing a keynote as well, which we also really need to write because it's a very, very important one when you do a keynote at NDC. G'day, Neil. Sunny Sydney. I heard it wasn't very sunny yesterday. Sunny here today. Anyway, so we've now got this printer up and running. I thought I'd give you some first impressions. And the reason I thought about this today is we've been printing this stuff. Now, if you're looking at this wondering, is it like an artificial heart? What is it? We're printing a hydroponics system. So hydroponics, there's probably a proper definition of it, but growing plants with water and stuff. How's that? And fertilizers. So there's a whole bunch of tutorials out there about how to create a hydroponic system so you can grow herbs and things like that in your backyard. And part of the model involves printing these pieces just here. And part of the model involves printing these other pieces just here, which are the little baskets where the various plants and some material that they grow in goes into here, and then they connect like so. And so far we've printed two of these little cup ones just here. And then if you have a look down the middle, you can see the water can then flow. So you're looking at it from the top. Water can flow down here. There's a little hole in here. We're going to have, I think it's about, three-eighths inch, because everything's American, three-eighths inch hose goes here, put a little fish tank pump down the bottom, goes all the way to the top, and then sort of filters down and keeps everything watered. So we're actually printing something proper useful, because we love cooking, and I'd love to have some herbs in my backyard and hopefully not kill them all straight away. But we printed this with PETG, which is a filament which is more resilient to heat. The two predominant filaments most people seem to print with are either PLA, which are very, what have I got? I can't show you that other one I printed. Something from ages ago. PLA, this is a a surround for a rain sensor, which has been sitting on my desk incomplete for about the last year. It's fairly strong, but it's brittle as well. It can smash. It's not heat resistant. Different filaments, different properties. So I've been printing this up. That new Mark IV is much faster than the Mark III. Much faster, much quieter as well. I've also not had a single filament jam or anything like that. It's fairly early days. And then the thing that really, really sets it apart from the Mark III, one of the things, is now you can actually send prints remotely as well. So in the Mark III, you either had to chuck it on a USB stick and then walk down and plug it in, or you go and get Octoprint and you put it on a Raspberry Pi, which is what we did. It was good. It was a third-party part of the ecosystem. Open source, great project. I think we donated to it at one stage as well because it's just a good thing. excuse me. But having it natively integrated is really cool. So you can send files directly to the printer via IP address locally using what they call Prusa Link, or there is Prusa Connect, which is a web-based system where you can monitor your print status from anywhere. There is a Home Assistant integration into Prusa Link, and it is accessed by IP address. It's all internal. It's not cloud-dependent. So that's great. So now I've got the Prusa bits in my Home Assistant, which is what I did before with Octoprint. There was an integration for that as well. But it is just an extraordinarily cool machine. And to see it faster, quieter, more reliable than the old one as well is great. The thing we're missing at the moment is we don't have the latest generation MMU, the multi-material unit. So our old Mark III has got, I think it was an MMU2 back then, wasn't it? MMU2, where you can actually have five different filaments that can go and get selected and then pulled in and then printed with a little bit and then spat back out. We don't yet have that on the Mark IV. So we don't exactly have complete parity yet. For printing stuff like this, doesn't matter because it's all just one filament color. So we're going to share a little bit more on that as we go along, and then eventually we'll go and do that talk in Oslo, and hopefully it'll be, well, it should be up on YouTube, and we'll be able to share that with everyone. But as I've said for the last, I guess, 3 years that I've been doing this, it is, for the most part, a bit of hobby and a bit of fun, but it is the best thing, education-wise, that I've ever bought for the kids by a massive margin. So Elle was 8 when she started designing things in Tinkercad and sending them to the printer and changing filaments and so on. And now as an 11-year-old, being able to actually create some pretty cool stuff as well. Very proud, massive, massive plus for getting yourself a Prusa 3D printer. Neil says, was raining cats and dogs yesterday in Sydney, blue skies now. Yeah, it's just kind of dreary here pretty much all day yesterday. And then we just had an extraordinarily busy afternoon and I slept in till 7:30, which is really late for me. And I looked outside and it was beautiful. And my mates who live nearby are like, we're all going jet skiing at 5 something in the morning. Let's go jet skiing. Because apparently it was lovely. I miss that. Maybe tomorrow morning I'll do that. All right, folks, I'm going to wrap that up there. Thank you very much for watching. I will be away next week. I will be somewhere that I hope will not be raining. It will still be in this state. It is probably one of my favorite places in the world. It's been a few years since I've been there. I think I'm going to wait until I'm there next week, and then I'll do a live stream from there. But it is epically, epically nice. See you there.